Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday. Get your requests in. One artist, two songs. We'll play them a little bit later on. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Two for Tuesday. Yep. Get those requests in. And we're also going to be, I'm going to be give you my my Oscar nomination predictions in the five major categories, the four acting categories, best picture and best director. So I'll give you my predictions because in just a few hours they will be announcing the Oscar nominations for this year. So there you go. Big movie morning. And speaking of movies, our good buddy Eric Childress, who joins us every Monday morning to review all the new movies, goes to a ton of film festivals throughout the year and covers them for us right here on the show. So right now he's at the Sundance Film Festival in Utah, which he goes to pretty much every year, and sees a ton of movies. He's there for a short period of time and crams in as many movies as he possibly can, and then gives us like exclusive looks at some of these movies that we'll be seeing in the coming weeks and months. But we get first look at them here. And so Eric is live, and he is in Utah right now, and let's welcome Eric to the show. Eric, welcome.
Thank you, man.
How are you?
I'm doing okay.
How's the weather there?
Weird.
Yeah, really?
Year.
Really?
like when we showed up on Thursday, they hadn't had snow in I don't know how long, but like we were coming in, driving into Park City, and there's just a complete lack of snow on the mountains.
Wow.
All over the place. Yeah. Now it did end up snowing most of the day on Friday and into Saturday, so we did end up getting our Sundance snow here.
Right.
But yeah, it was just like Thursday. I mean, it was like 59 degrees here.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, that's unusual.
Which has never happened. Yeah.
How many years have you been going now? How many years is this?
This is my 15th year.
Wow, 15 years.
Believe that?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. Well, you always try to cram in as many movies as possible. You've been there since, you said, Thursday.
Yes.
And how many movies have you seen? It's now Tuesday.
I have seen 23.
Jeez. 23 movies. All right.
Yeah.
Well,
and I skipped one this morning.
And you skipped one this morning. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you need time to eat and sleep.
Yes.
All right. Yes, well, look, we love to get into it. The Sundance Film Festival out there in Utah, and a lot of great movies, you know, show up there. Celebrities all over the place. It's a big festival. It's become incredibly popular. So you tell me where you want to start movie-wise and give us the goods.
Well, let's start with one that actually was sort of like the first one that kind of stood out. We got to see this one early. It actually hasn't, I don't think it had a really big premiere here yet at Sundance. I think there might have been something on last week, but anyway. But it's a movie called Hearts Beat Loud.
Okay.
And this is a new film from Brett Haley, who did I'll See You in My Dreams and The Hero last year, which also played Sundance.
Yeah.
And this one he specifically wrote for Nick Offerman.
Okay, I like it already.
Yeah, exactly. and get this, he plays the owner of a vinyl shop.
No kidding.
Yeah. The only thing is it's not set in Chicago.
Oh, all right.
But he's the owner of a vinyl shop, and he has a daughter who's looking to become a doctor. She's about to go off to college. And his wife has passed away many years ago, and the two of them together were singers back in the day. And he's kind of put that away. Obviously, his love of music still stands with the record store. But he's just kind of going through his old stuff. And he has, like, regular, like, jam sessions with his daughters, played by Kersey Clemons. And so just one day, they're screwing around with their equipment, and they put this song together. And it's just one of those magical things where it just kind of works. It just works for them. And he's kind of torn about her going to college and him being all alone and everything. And he puts the song up on Spotify, and it kind of becomes a little hit. And so the movie then becomes this, you know, kind of back and forth of whether or not he can actually get her to kind of stick around and write more songs with them. It becomes this, you know, this really kind of father-daughter bond between the two of them. And it really has, you know, it's kind of the same appeal in some spots, the way that when we first saw That Thing You Do over 20 years ago,
yeah,
where this song that they create that you hear multiple times throughout the movie is so catchy and so wonderful and so lovely that you, like, instantly want the song you know, as part of your collection by the end of the movie. And it's not the only song they do. They end up doing some other songs, and the songwriting is really nicely done. Nick Offerman's really good in the movie, and that's to be expected. Kiersey Clemons is good. Toni Collette is in the film. And it's just kind of a lovely, warm movie. It's funny. Leaves you with a good feeling by the end. And, you know, anytime we can say Nick Offerman has a starring role,
yeah,
that's like you said, is a positive right there. So this was one that struck us very early, and we were very happy with it.
Hearts Beat Loud. Has anybody picked it up?
Yeah, apparently Sony has picked it up. There's still some speculation of whether or not it's a completely done deal. Like their international worldwide division has picked it up. So we're not quite sure if they just have the rights to release it internationally, or if they're still, I think they have like rights of first refusal to release it in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
Or not. But yeah, it got a deal.
All right. Great. Okay. Hearts mm-hmm. Beat Loud. Okay. Where do you want to go to next?
Yeah. Let's go to another one that actually has another bit of Chicago significance. This is a film that was actually filmed in the city last spring and in the summer, I believe. And it's called What They Had. And this is a movie starring Hilary Swank and Michael Shannon. The two of them play brother and sister, and their mother is played by Blythe Danner, who I should also mention is also in Hearts Beat Loud.
Okay.
And in both movies, she's suffering from dementia. But in What They Had, it's actually the central focus of the movie. The movie opens with her leaving her house and, you know, walking to God knows where, and the family, you know, trying to find her. So Hilary Swank comes back home. Michael Shannon lives in Chicago. Their dad is played by Robert Forster, and they come home to Chicago basically to figure out what to do with mom. Dad doesn't want to put her in any kind of home. Michael Shannon's character is really pushing because he knows it's the right thing. Dad has had health problems himself, and Hilary Swank's sister is kind of just torn with, you know, exactly who to side with in this whole thing. You know, and on paper, you know, when you see, you know, family struggling with mom's dementia issues, you know, you kind of get those wonder flashes where this could go sideways very early,
mm-hmm.
Or just become very mawkish or very kind of cliched. And I'm happy to say that, you know, I found myself not thinking that a lot during this movie, and a lot of it is due to the performances. It's a pretty first rate cast you got right there.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Robert Forster is really good. Hilary Swank's character is a little bit underwritten, but she has a really great dynamic, brother sister dynamic with Michael Shannon, who just absolutely kills in this movie. You know, I mean, a subject matter like this, I think, is always best served with a bit of humor. And Michael Shannon, you know, doing that dry thing that he's so, amazing at,
right?
Does it, you know, throughout the entire movie. And, you know, he's not the nicest character in the world, but you still kind of love him,
yeah.
Just because, you know, because he's Michael Shannon. And so for a good portion of the movie, it's actually a very believable and often funny family drama. I think it steps a couple false beats in the final act. But Blythe Danner has a really good line that kind of pushes you away from the edge a little bit. But it's nice, you know, to have a, you know, movie, you know, set in Chicago and, you know, multiple references to Berwyn not entirely favorable either. But it's just, yeah, so it worked for me. It's not something, you know, to be completely over the moon about, but it ultimately worked because of the performances.
Okay. What They Had. Again, is that getting distributed?
It hasn't gotten. No, yes, I'm sorry, it does. Bleecker Street already had it.
Oh, Bleecker Street's
coming
into
the festival.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Eric, hang on, okay?
Sure thing.
Eric Childress is with us, and he's given us an exclusive look at some of the movies he's seen at the Sundance Film Festival for 2018. And we'll get to see many of them in the weeks and the months to come, but we're getting a preview now. We'll take a break, and we'll come back more with Eric after this. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Good morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking movies right now. Eric Childress is live in Utah at the Sundance Film Festival, where there's been a lack of snow, but not a lack of movies. He's seen 23 movies in 4 days or something insane like that. And he's giving us exclusive previews of some of the stuff that he saw. Let's get back to the conversation. Here's Eric. Hey, Eric.
Hey.
Hey. All right.
Okay.
Let's get back to it.
Okay, let me give you a film that I think is going to make you very happy.
Okay.
Because it's a horror movie.
Cool.
Okay. And Sundance, their midnight selections over the last few years have left a little bit to be desired. But a late addition to the schedule this year is a movie called Hereditary.
Okay.
And A24 has the movie already, so it's going to be released. And let me tell you something, Nick.
Yeah.
This is the best pure horror film I've seen at Sundance since The Babadook.
Well, now, that's saying something, man.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tell me about it.
Okay. Well, it's a first-time filmmaker. The film stars Toni Collette, Gabriel Byrne, husband and wife. Her mother has just passed away. The movie actually opens with her obituary. Not exactly the closest relationship between the two of them. But soon after the funeral, she starts seeing apparitions of mom around the house. And soon enough, this is going to start affecting their children. One played by Alex Wolff, their older son, who's in the Jumanji sequel right now. Mm-hmm. And a 13-year-old daughter who's got some personality issues. I'll just leave it at that. So this movie becomes this really kind of unrelenting haunted house tale that I can't even really do justice, because it just keeps evolving and surprising you in where it's eventually going. People who like the Conjuring movies are going to find a lot to like in this thing. The filmmaker, I don't have his name in front of me.
It's Ari Aster.
Ari Aster. Yeah, I knew it was a double A. But this guy just hit kind of a home run. I mean, the hyperbole that I speak about the Babadook is apparently being shared by most of the critics who are seeing this movie. The responses are incredible, and I'm telling you, I saw it at the midnight show the other night, and the crowd was jumping, the crowd was hooting, and then laughing at the fact that the movie got them so many times.
Yeah,
it's kind of funny to see Toni Collette deal with kind of the I See Dead People aspect. Now she's the one having
right.
to do it,
right? Right.
Needless to say, this is obviously 1,000 times better than that other movie.
Yeah.
But it's also an incredible performance from Toni Collette. It's really great horror performance that, again, will remind you a bit of Babadook, because it all comes down to mother's, protection of her children and her family. And things like that, and Gabriel Byrne basically has to play the put-upon husband who can't figure out if his wife is crazy and his kids are going insane or being hurt or by these spirits. And I'm telling you, it takes you into so many different directions. And then, of course, just in the last 15 minutes, just goes completely bonkers, and in a great way. And I'm telling you, Nick, you are just going to eat this thing up.
Yeah,
amazing.
I was looking at your list on Letterboxd. I see it's number one. So so far, it's your favorite movie that you've seen at Sundance.
It is my favorite movie. Yes.
All right, Hereditary, and it's A24, which means it'll be a good release. And most likely, because it's A24, it's a good movie, because they've got an unbelievable track record. So
consider their horror film track record.
Recently,
with The Witch, and It Comes at Night. Yeah. I mean, it's. I'm telling you, this. I hope that that audiences respond to it. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, Hereditary.
Fantastic.
Hereditary, and he loved it. Okay, great horror movie. That's always good news. All right, looking forward to that one. What else we got?
Since we're talking about A24, let's talk about another movie that they actually brought to the festival or picked up very early. I can't remember where it was, but it's a film called Eighth Grade.
Okay.
And it's exactly what it sounds like. It is the last week of eighth grade for young girls about to head into high school. It's a newcomer played by Casey Fisher, I think is her name. Mm-hmm. Casey or Kelsey Fisher?
Elsie. Yeah. Elsie. It's Elsie Fisher.
Elsie Fisher.
Yeah.
Elsie Fisher.
Right.
Okay,
I just looked it up on IMDb.
Okay, great.
All right.
Yeah, Elsie Fisher. And, she makes kind of video blogs. She's not certainly not the most popular girl in school, doesn't really have many friends, and her dad is played by Josh Hamilton, who is just kind of really awkward, trying to be the cool dad, trying to be, you know, but is always constantly just getting in the way of, you know, whatever she's doing. And it really, you kind of, you know, see him through her eyes. So you just kind of see this sort of like this bumbling dad character throughout. But this is a film that's very much in the vein of recent films that we've had over the past couple of years, like Lady Bird, that we've obviously talked about a lot, mm-hmm. as well as The Edge of 17. And you could actually, you know, do like Eighth Grade and Edge of 17 and Lady Bird and make that a trilogy. And you would see very clear parallels in the plotting between those two movies,
yeah.
or between those three movies. But I think, you know, each one of those has a different way to tell their story. And Eighth Grade in particular gets the age so right. It gets, you know, the key word that I used is awkward.
Yeah.
And the way that you're just kind of in this stuck in between, that you don't quite know, you know, if you're happy with where you've been, you're not quite sure where you're going. Again, you know, the awkwardness of trying to make new friends and meeting new people and, you know, being that person who's like stuck in like a group of five people and no one's talking to you. And you're trying to involve yourself, but yeah. you just don't know how.
Yeah.
It gets a lot of that stuff right. And that's the stuff that I really enjoyed about this movie. It was written and directed by Bo Burnham. And
he's a stand-up.
Stand-up comedian. Yes.
Yeah. He was in Big Sick. He's in The Big Sick.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, he's in The Big Sick.
That's right.
Yeah.
I knew the name sounded familiar every time I kept saying it, but I couldn't place where I had seen him before,
yeah.
of course. He's in The Big Sick.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then, like I said, it's a pretty terrific debut. Again, Elsie Fisher, a real find, really good in the movie. And, this is another, again, A24. I'm sure that they'll find, a way to make this work in theaters. But it's a film that a lot of people will respond to, I believe.
All right, cool. That's called Eighth Grade. A24 picked it up, and we'll get to see that one as well. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, where you want to go now?
Let's go. I got a couple documentaries. I'll start with one. Two kind of showbiz documentaries that are worth looking at. One of them I saw very early in the fest, and it is Robin Williams' Come Inside My Mind.
Right, I've heard about this one, yeah.
Yes, it's an HBO doc. It's going to be, I think they're aiming for a fall release on HBO. Marina Zenovich made the film. And what's so kind of wonderful about this movie is that it kind of, you know, it in some places it has a sort of the traditional documentary approach with people talking about him and old clips and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it through a lot of it, it has that sort of that Listen to Me Marlon feel, where you actually have Robin Williams on tape during interviews narrating mm-hmm. his life story.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously that brings, you know, a real sense of place and just heartbreak to the movie, which is ultimately about, I mean, as much as it's obviously about Robin Williams, it is very much about the need for laughter. You know, we've all heard the stories about, Robin Williams, you know, he would come out and he'd be a million miles a minute on stage. And then backstage, he would be completely insecure, not sure of himself, not sure if he made people laugh or made people happy. And that's something that it really comes across in this film. And it takes you through the entire run, the early stand up days. There's a lot of rare footage. Back there, there's Mork and Mindy outtakes that are quite hilarious throughout. I know you weren't always on the Robin Williams train,
yeah.
Nick. Although World's Greatest Dad is prominently figured in the film. Bobcat Goldthwait, who was a best friend, best friend was Robin Williams.
Right.
He's only featured in taped stuff, previous interviews and things. So I'm kind of wondering if it might have been too hard for him to talk about, because they have a lot of really, I mean, David Letterman is interviewed for the film.
Do they cover the relationship that Robin Williams had with Christopher Reeve? Is that covered in the movie?
Yes, a bit.
Okay.
A bit. They don't get into after Christopher Reeve had his accident. stuff, but they show how they, you know, they were in Juilliard together.
Yeah, yeah.
There's actually video or home movie footage of Robin Williams at like the I think it's like the baptism of one of Robin's children.
Mm-hmm.
That's again, so you add those emotional elements on top of the Robin Williams story, Christopher Reeve, and other things that happen.
Yeah. I mean,
Pam Dauber's interviewed in the film, and her interviews alone are absolutely kind of devastating.
Mm.
Especially towards the end when, you know, people start to like realize that something was wrong with him.
Yeah.
Towards the very end. But it's very moving. And like I said, when I first saw this movie that, you know, Robin Williams, I think was like the first stand-up comedian that I really knew.
Yeah.
You know, I knew him from television, obviously. And I think, you know, his, the shows that he'd done, they were on HBO, were among the first that I had
sure,
seen, and
yeah,
young comedian specials and stuff.
Yeah.
So this hit me in a very personal way watching this.
Hmm.
I mean, Patch Adams is covered and stuff like that, but there are a lot more highs than lows,
yeah,
obviously, in this thing. And I think you would really enjoy this.
Well, look, you know, he wasn't always my cup of tea, but he was a fascinating guy, you know, and you know, obviously deserves to have a documentary made about him. He's one of the most beloved comedians of all time. So,
yeah.
All right. Robin Williams, Come Inside My Mind. We got a break, and I know you said you had another documentary to talk to us about.
Mm-hmm.
So hang on for a second.
Yeah.
We'll jump right into that afterwards. Okay.
Okay.
If you take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN Tuesday. We'll get to the 2 for Tuesdays in a little bit. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. The Oscar nominations will be announced in just a few hours, and I'm going to give you my predictions in the five major categories and see how close I get when they're announced at 722 Central AM. So there you go. That's all coming up, and it's we're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We are talking with Eric Childress, who is live in Utah at the Sundance Film Festival. He's seen 23 movies in 4 days, and he covers as many as he possibly can with us. And we'll talk to him again on Monday morning to do a wrap-up of the entire festival. And we'll have a little more time to talk on Monday morning, because there's only a stupid Maze Runner movie coming out. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks for
reminding me of Maze Runner.
Movie. Yeah, well, we'll just, because, I mean, you know, we'll see, you know, there's only that movie, and I think a couple of VOD movies to talk about, but it should be quick, and then we'll just jump right into Sundance, and you can, whatever we don't get to this morning, you can throw in there on Monday.
Great.
Okay.
Great.
All right, we just got a documentary about Robin Williams. You said there were two documentaries. They were both entertainment involved, you said?
Yes, showbiz.
Okay. Showbiz, okay.
And I bet when I tell you the title of this, you'll be able to figure out who it's about.
Okay.
It's called "Won't You Be My Neighbor."
Okay, I have to confession on this. I've been reading about this one. And I can't wait to see it. It's about Fred Rogers, and
it is.
I mean, who doesn't want to see a movie about Mr. Rogers?
I don't know. Horrible people.
Horrible people. Exactly. Horrible people.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Because So this is about Fred Rogers, and I can't imagine anyone growing up, especially around our ages, grew up in some way with Mr. Rogers'
Absolutely.
Neighborhood.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And watching this documentary, which obviously is all about, how the show came about, the things that, he did on the show, and, about the man himself. And the one thing that, for one, it made me want to go back and watch the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
which seems like a weird thing to do as an adult. but when you watch this film, there's almost like a weird sense memory thing going on, because it reminds you of just how important the show actually was.
Oh, yeah.
For kids.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't just, a silly guy with a sweater and his shoes and, trolleys and little puppets and things like that. You know, and in the same way, Sesame Street obviously is in this realm as well. But to watch the film and see some of the topics that they covered for children,
mm-hmm.
it draws something out of you. Like, I don't necessarily remember seeing these specific shows, but yet I felt like I had.
Yeah.
I felt like I had been there, and I was being reminded of something, of some lesson that I was taught, some reassuring lesson that I was taught as a child. And it's kind of impossible to not have those kind of emotional reactions watching this thing, which also goes into some of the negative spin about Mr. Rogers. It doesn't, you know, focus too far on that, but, you know, the accusations of orientation,
yeah,
whether or not he was the, you know, the genuine article that you saw on television, or maybe he was someone else off screen. You know, what the message of, you know, telling children that they were special, that they didn't have to earn anything, that they just automatically were special. You know, really, that, all this, these really stupid think pieces that have come out over the years,
right,
about Mr. Rogers. It's all kind of nonsense when, again, when you see what this guy was tackling, and then kept coming back after he had done the show and, you know, racked up like almost 600 shows on, you know, on VHS tape. And then he kept coming back after 9/11, after, you know, the Challenger explosion,
right, right,
and coming back to, you know, reassure children of these horrors that were happening in the world. It really hits you to the core, and it makes you a child again, and it makes you realize that in some ways anyone who watched that show as a kid is a better adult for it.
Mm. Wow!
So it's a really lovely film, and Focus Features has it, and from what I understand, they're going to be releasing it theatrically in June.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Won't You Be My Neighbor? Now let me ask you a couple of quick questions. You know, mm-hmm, the talking head stuff in the movie. Do they get Michael Keaton?
No.
Oh, how about did they talk to George before he died? George Romero?
No.
Okay. So do they mention that George Romero got his start on the show?
I don't remember seeing that in the film at all.
Okay, but you knew that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did not.
Oh, yeah, George Romero got his start because they filmed it in Pittsburgh. That was it. And he got his start working on the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood, and the crew let him use a bunch of equipment to help film Night of the Living Dead.
I mean, I stepped out for a couple minutes just to go. I had to go to the restroom, but yeah. So unless I missed something in those 2 or 3 minutes,
yeah,
which is possible, I don't remember seeing that.
Okay, well, but anyway, but that, I love that trivia. I love that piece of trivia that George,
right,
George Romero got started out on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. For some reason, I just find that absolutely amazing.
Yeah, fantastic.
So, all right, cool. Won't You Be My Neighbor? Probably coming out in June, so look for that.
Yeah.
All right, great. I can't wait to see that. All right, well, yeah. What do you got next?
One I just saw last night,
okay,
that is still kind of stirring around in my head, and I wasn't going to see it because, you look at the schedule and you look at certain titles and you're like, I don't know if that's going to be my cup of tea.
Yeah.
But it's called Assassination Nation.
Okay.
Okay. And I have to give Brian Tallarico some credit here. When he described the movie, he's like, you should, because he had just seen it, and he said, you should go see this because you'll really like it. And I said, okay. And he goes, it is basically Mean Girls, and then it becomes The Purge.
Jeez, all right, thank you.
Which is an interesting way to look at it, because it involves four high school students who find out, well, they don't find out, but they live in the town of Salem. So, okay,
uh-huh,
metaphor alert.
Uh-huh.
And they find out that someone in town is hacking people's private phone information, computer information, stuff like that, and leaking it. And leaking sort of like really horrible secrets. So there's like a the town mayor who is, you know, against gay rights and stuff, finds out that he's been like dressing in women's lingerie and stuff, and so that leads to something. But then it starts to delve into the levels of privacy that become a little bit more sketchy as far as the moral conundrums of them. You know, do these people have any right to privacy, and not just that, but our perception of that privacy and what we're viewing, what we're being exposed, and the self-righteousness that we have. And we're seeing that a lot, going on with, obviously, even the Me Too movement, and, a bunch of other things where the lines are starting to get a little blurred a bit, and it's even uncomfortable. Even talking about it now, it's a little uncomfortable to talk about. And then this movie does get to a point where I basically described it as George Romero's The Crazies.
Oh, boy.
Pretty much.
All right.
Yeah, and that, you know, but there's no the chemical, you know, making the people nuts. It's what's online. It's what's coming, you know, the moral outrage that these people think they're supposed to be feeling against these people that are being exposed then leads to murderous intentions.
Okay.
And lynchings and things like that. And it's a pretty unnerving film. There's really some remarkable filmmaking on stage. There's a home invasion sequence late in the film that is really kind of masterfully done. It gets incredibly violent by the third act, it really gives you kind of a lot to chew on. Especially given the moment that we're living in, it's basically like that entire season of South Park where they said they were going to hack everybody.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's basically that, except everyone's now murdering everybody.
Okay.
So it really worked for me.
Assassination Nation. I'm looking at the Bill Skarsgård and Joel McHale are also in it.
Yes. Joel McHale has a very prominent role in the film.
All right. And then Suki Waterhouse is in it, who was in the Bad Batch. I love her.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Very cool. All right. Yeah. Assassination Nation. Are we going to get to see this one or?
I think someone will pick that up. The buzz on it was pretty pretty big.
Okay.
Amongst the press. So I think that we will see that at some point.
Okay, cool. Okay, we got time for one more, Eric.
One more. Okay, let's see. Where do we want to go here? I'll just go to a movie that I saw just last night as well, right after Assassination Nation.
Right.
And this one's actually coming out in April. Another Bleecker Street release called Beirut.
Oh, this is John Hamm.
This is John Hamm.
Yeah.
And directed by Brad Anderson.
Yeah. I saw the trailer for it. It looks good.
Yeah, written by Tony Gilroy. And it's John Hamm plays a negotiator, sort of a former negotiator. There's an incident back in the 70s that caused him to basically become an alcoholic and leave that behind. But he's called back into action. There's been an American taken hostage. And he's actually been personally requested by the people involved in the hostage taking to get him back to do this. We kind of figured that out pretty early why. But so he's brought back into the fold. Rosamund Pike plays another member of the government who's sort of his handler. Dean Norris, Shea Whigham, Mark Pellegrino, all in the film. And basically what you have here is Bridges Spies Light, which in no way is a criticism from me. It's very, very well directed by Brad Anderson. Gilroy's script, very snappy throughout. And Hamm is really good in this movie. I'd have to go through his filmography to see if he's given a role that he's really had that he's really had a chance to sink his teeth into.
Yeah.
He's obviously been very good, but he's very much in Don Draper yelling mode throughout most of the movie,
mm-hmm.
which again is a good thing. I think he's very good in the movie. Again, Gilroy's script really crackles. It's under 2 hours. It moves. It's not, again, anything brand new, but it's a solid 3-star movie. And you can do a lot worse than that these days.
Yeah. Well, I was looking forward to it. I saw the trailer for it. And, I like to see, because John Hamm, when John Hamm first hit the scene on Mad Men, I thought, oh, this guy's a deadly serious, actor who's going to play very flawed, mean characters. And then now for the past, 15 years, he's been doing comedy. And it's
not great.
It is. No, he's great. And he's one of the funniest guys on the planet. There's no question about it. But as soon as I saw this trailer, I was like, okay, I want to see John Hamm do this kind of stuff again.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's very good in the film. Very, very little humor. throughout this thing, and it's nice to see. Brad Anderson's been a director that I've liked for a long time,
He's
been a Sundance staple. I mean, it seems like he's more of a Sundance staple than he is almost anywhere else.
Right. Yeah. No.
I mean, I remember my very first Sundance, first or second Sundance, where I saw The Machinist.
Yeah.
Which absolutely blew me away, and he's had stuff before then, stuff since then. So it's nice to see that he's got a movie that's actually going to, make it in the theaters and get a, hopefully a pretty decent run.
Well, as Sam Rockwell said in his acceptance speech, he's like, I made a lot of indies, and it's nice to be in a movie that people are seeing.
Right.
Exactly. Right. Okay, so Beirut, which actually is going to hit theaters in April, April 13th.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. So you can check that out there. All right. Well, Eric, have fun. Okay. And when do you come back?
Come back on Wednesday.
You come back on Wednesday.
Tomorrow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tomorrow, Wednesday, you come back, and then we'll get a full wrap up. Whatever you didn't get to this morning and whatever you're going to see in the next couple of days, we'll do it on Sunday because we'll have time because I don't think it's going to take a long time to talk about the damn Maze Runner.
Great, because there's a lot more to talk about.
Cool. Outstanding. All right, Eric, I appreciate it, man.
Thanks.
Get some rest. There's Eric Childress, everybody. He goes to all the film festivals for us, covers them, and it's always a big preview, and we have a lot of fun talking about it, and it gives us a lot of movies to look forward to. So there it is. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got weather, we got traffic right now, and I got the weather for you here.